Good morning, everyone. I hope you're all well. Good. Hope Keshwin is proceeding apace. And again, our shiur today is sponsored by Mel David, our usual sponsor, in gratitude to Hashem for the many blessings he's been given. And Bezras Hashem, you should be in good health. I want to start with two verses in Mishle. Actually a total of four verses, but two different places in Mishle. One is Perek Chav, chapter 20. Chapter 20, verse 6 and 7, Pasuk Vav and Pasuk Zion. Pasuk Vav reads, Rav Adam Yikra Ish Chasto, V'yish Emunim Mi Yimsa. This is actually a very difficult pasuk to even translate into English, but I will tell you the explanation of Rabbeinu Bechaya. Simply, Rabbeinu Bechaya wrote a very great commentary on the Torah. He lived in the 1300s. And as a hakdama to every parsha in the Torah, he starts off with an essay on Mishle. So that's kind of my crib sheet. That's a little bit of my cheating, in which we can always find something in Mishle connected to the Parshat HaShavua. I don't always use his pasuk, but today I'm going to use his pasuk. And the way he translates the verse is the following. Rav Adam is interpreted to mean a majority of people. Now, that's a little unusual. That's not the way you would normally express it, but I'll go with his translation. Rav Adam means a majority of people. Yikra ish chasto. Proclaim the kindnesses they do to others. Meaning most people show off. If I do you a favor, I want you to know about it. If I give charity, I want it to be announced. I want my name to be placed on the building. Rav Adam, meaning most people, Yikra ish chasto, they will proclaim their chesed, the good things that they do. V'yish emunim, but a man of faith, Rabbeinu Bechaya says, this is an unusual use of faith, that there's another pasuk that says, Ne'aman ruach yichased avor, he who is faithful covers up things. So ish emunim means the person who doesn't want credit, mi yimtza. How will you find such a person? The person who doesn't want credit. So again, in truth, if you look at the Hebrew, this is a bit of a whole dochak to fit into the translation of the words, but this is Rabbeinu Bechaya's interpretation, that most people find a need to proclaim their goodness, but a person who is faithful to Hashem and does not need credits, mi yimtza, very, very hard to find. And then the pasuk goes on and says, Mishalech betumo tzadik, he who walks with simplicity. Now simplicity, tam, is one of those words that one has to understand. You know, when you look at the, I've always thought this would be a good project for a PhD dissertation, that is the artistic portrayal in Haggadot of the Arba Banim. We have the famous four sons in the Haggadah, the Chacham, the Rasha, the Tam, and the Eino Yodea Lishol. So, for example, sometimes the Rasha is portrayed as an axe murderer, and sometimes the Rasha is portrayed as a modern college professor who intellectually rejects the Torah. But the Chacham is usually a rabbi, a learned rabbi, or at least a yeshiva bachar, something like that. That's how, if he's portrayed as a younger person. But the Tam is an interesting portrayal, because the Tam is portrayed in two ways. Sometimes he's portrayed as a simpleton, not too bright, not too smart, kind of naive. But the truth of the matter is, that's not actually what Tam means, because that's a pejorative term. Yaakov is described as Ish Tam. And Tam, I believe everywhere in Tanakh, Tam is only used in a very positive way. And to walk with Hashem as a Tam does not mean you don't have intellectual capacity. But it means you accept God's will without questioning it, without having to know the reasons. Right? Yaakov was Ishtan. He was simple. In fact, there's an old, I shouldn't use Christian music as a any type of raya, but those of you from your prior existence may remember the old Shaker hymn, "'Tis good to be simple." I will not sing it to you. But the meaning, it's a famous old hymn. And good to be simple is actually good to be a tam, meaning to say, to accept Hashem's will without questioning. So the reason why the tam gets a simple answer is not because the tam is a simpleton, but because the tam doesn't have to. You know, the tam just knows Hashem did us a great thing, and you see at Mitzrayim, and for that I am grateful. I accept God's will in my life. So the pasuk here again says, what is the definition of a tzaddik? Mitalech betumah. Someone who walks on the path of life with tamimut. He does not look for segulos, how to get rich, or whatever it is. He understands that he or she has a mission in life, and his goal is to fulfill Hashem's will, and Hashem will give him whatever Hashem decides to give him. He is not trying to manipulate Kaviyachal, the Ribono Shel Olam, to give him what he wants. To me, more, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. Without blemish, without distortion. Now, then it goes on, a tzaddik, that's mishalech betumo, ashrei banav acharav. His children will be fortunate in a number of ways. First of all, they're fortunate because they have such a role model. They'll be raised in that home of Tmimut, and that's wonderful. And the second aspect is that Hashem will give brachos to the children in the merit of the parents, meaning even though it's true that ultimately each person is judged on their own, but we do know that there are zechuyos of the parents that can help the children in many, many ways. So Rabbeinu Bechaya says very beautifully that part of the aspect of Tumimut, this is connected to Rav Adam Yikra Ishvasto, the preceding verse, because a Tamim who lives only to serve Hashem and not to get personal benefit is a person who will not seek credit for his accomplishments because he's not doing it for him, he's doing it for Hashem. So therefore, an aspect of Tumimut is that you are a person that is an Ish Emunim, you live with Emunah, and you don't live to get credit. But Rabbeinu Bechaya then goes on in a second explanation, it's not a contradiction, and he says that Mishalech B'tumon Tzadik, he who walks with simplicity is righteous, and his children will be blessed because of him, is actually a remez to Noach himself. Because if you look at the Torah itself uses three descriptions for Noach. Noach ish tzaddik, tamim haya b'dorosav, et Elokim hishalech Noach. So all three of those terms in Mishlei, in other words, Rabbeinu Bechaya is saying that Shlomo HaMelech in Mishlei is hinting at the greatness of Noach. He was mishalech, et Elokim mishalech, bitumo is tamim, sadik is sadik, and ashrei bana bachara. Shem, Chom, and Yopet were not saved in their own merit, they were saved in the merit of Noach, that Noach brought blessing to his children and by extension to all of humanity. So here, I want to then show you another pasuk, which deals with a very, very different topic, but I'm going to connect Perek Chav and the next pasuk, which is Perek Chav Dalet. If you look at Perek Chav Dalet, yeah, this is Pasuk Yud, 24, Pasuk 10. We'll read three verses here. Again, this is actually one of the most famous psukim in Mishlei, although it's not, a lot of people don't know the Hebrew. Hitzrapisa b'yom tzara. Hitzrapisa, again, is an unusual grammatical formulation, but it comes from Rifyon. If you have been weak at a time of tzara, a time of crisis, tsar kochacha, your strength is diminished. Now, once again, if you translate the pasuk literally, you know, it's what's called the totality. It's like saying, if you don't tell the truth, you're a liar. I mean, what does it say? If you are weak in a time of crisis, your strength is weak. Right? So what is the pshat? So Chazal offer a very beautiful interpretation. Chazal say, and it fits really, and you'll see it actually fits contextually the next pasuk, that if at a time when someone needs your help, that could be financial, emotional, any type of way you can help a person, hitrapisa, all of a sudden you become weak, you say, I'm sorry, I don't have the time, then what's going to happen is, when you need your strength for your problems, your strength is going to be diminished. Because Hashem gave us abilities. Hashem gave us kochot to be able to help others. If we don't use our kochot to help others, Hashem may take it away. So when we need to help ourselves, our power will be diminished. See, we often think that if I spend too much of my energy helping other people, I'm going to be depleted. It's the other way around. You try to conserve your koach by not helping others, tsar kochacha, your strength is going to be diminished. And that actually fits. Chazal's interpretation is not stam drasha. It actually fits the next pasuk, because the next pasuk goes on and says, hatzel l'kuchim l'mavetz. Umatim laherek im tachsoch. If you hold yourself back from saving those who are being led to their death, ki somar hein lo yadanuza. And if you say, nobody will know that I didn't have a good excuse. Well, one entity does know. Halo tochen libos hu yavin. Hashem, who reads all hearts, he will understand. Benotzer napshecha hu yeda, and he who gives you life will know. Ve'hishiv li'adam kipalo, and he will give back to a person in accordance with his deeds.
So, what number is that?
Yeah, this is Perek Chavdalit, Pasuk Yudalev. So, I just read 10 and 11. I read Yud and Yudalev. Right, so this is a pasuk that basically says that we have chiyuv, we have nachrayot, to care about others, to take care of others. Now, again, there is a balancing act, because it is true in life that you do have to make time for yourself, meaning to say there is actually an aspect that sometimes the most selfless thing you can do is to be a little selfish, meaning you need to take time to recharge your batteries, whether you're a parent of children, whether you're a caregiver for your parents, a teacher, whatever it is, it's understood that if you are running on empty, you will not be of service to those who need you. I think I've mentioned this story before. I once read a little story, and some people think this is like the worst story they ever heard. And at first glance, when you hear it, it does rub you the wrong way, but it's an interesting story. This talks about the poverty in Yerushalayim. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach described it. When he was a child, there would sometimes be one egg, if there was an egg at all, that would be divided among eight children. I mean, that was the idea. People don't realize that people were dropping dead. In the year, this is before World War II, so in a way, the Holocaust overshadowed, right? The later Tsarist overshadowed the earlier Tsarist. But in Eretz Yisrael, prior to World War II, people were literally dying of starvation in the streets. That was a fairly common occurrence. So the story goes that a Rebbetzin, I think she was a widow, she had 8 children at home, and she got an egg. And the question is, what should she do? So she decided to go into the bedroom and eat the egg herself. Now, you said, what type of mother? One's reaction is, what type of mother would even do that? But she made a cheshbon. She said that if I divide the egg 8 ways among my kids, each child gets an eighth of an egg, how long is that going to last? I mean, even for us, eat one egg wouldn't last that long. I'll eat an egg, I'll be in good spirits, I'll have koach, even one egg, and I'll take care of my family. So in the long run, or at least for this day, my eating the egg will be better for them than my dividing the egg. Now, there's a lesson there. As I say, some people might just consider that to be a bad story. But the lesson basically is that you do have to take time for yourself. I'm not here to talk about that, b'arichas. I just want to mention that. Although this pasuk emphasizes not turning away from the other that is in need, one has to understand that sometimes to be able to help people, you need to take time for yourself as well. That's especially an important lesson, I think, for wives and mothers, or listen, for men as well, but I think maybe mothers and wives need to understand the constructive role of selfishness even more. Men are selfish anyway, so we don't need the musa for that message. Okay, so what is the shaychus, right? So I read to you pasuk perek chav that talked about the tzaddik mitalech betumo, the righteous person who walks with simplicity and perfection with God, who brings a zechus not only for himself, but for his children. And then we talk about he who turns away from others that are in need will find his own strength diminished. By the way, let me mention, just as an aside to this idea, all of you have heard, of course, of Rav Chaim Volozhin, the great, great Talmud of the Vilna Gaon, one of the true Gedolei Hador. And Rav Chaim Volozhin, in addition to starting the world-famous Volozhin Yeshiva, wrote a very well-known sefer that's widely, widely studied in the whole yeshivish world called Nefesh HaChaim. And the Nefesh HaChaim is essentially a criticism of Hasidus, although he does not mention Hasidus, because the Nefesh HaChaim emphasizes a lot that although it's important to have love of Hashem and fear of Hashem and emotions are very important, but one cannot allow the emotions to denigrate the importance of halacha. Because there had been a tendency in early Hasidus that emotions were so significant that maybe halachic detail was less important. An example, in fact, Chaim Volozhin gives an example of people who would daven late because they felt they didn't have kavana till it was after Zman Kriya Shema. And he gives the absurd example, I don't think that this was ever done. Imagine a person, Pesach comes and it's time to make a Seder, and you're dead tired, and you're going to fall asleep at the Seder. So let's say you make the following calculation. I'm supposed to experience Geula. Tonight I'm not going to experience anything. So I'll tell you what, I'll go to sleep early. Tomorrow morning, I'll wake up refreshed. I will make the most inspiring Seder that one could imagine. And isn't that what it's about? Isn't it about inspiration and love of God and fear of God? So who cares if I make the Seder Pesach night or Pesach morning? So Rav Chaim of Volozhin says, that's such an absurd statement because you have to keep Hashem's mitzvahs. You don't make up your own religion. Now, I once mentioned this story to a group of people who were not from. I just mentioned as an example of the importance of halacha. So a woman raised her hand and she said, yeah, that's what we did last year. We couldn't get the family together for Pesach, so we decided to make the Seder right after Pesach. Best Seder we ever had. So it's like they say, life imitates art, right? But you think it's so totally impossible, actually exactly done the mindset. So the Nefesh HaChaim is about, now you might say, in fact, it's interesting, many say, this is a fascinating discussion, the Tanya came out shortly before the Nefesh HaChaim. And some say that Tanya and Nefesh HaChaim are two books that are in dialogue with each other, even though the authors were never in dialogue. Meaning there was never a face-to-face conversation with Rav Chaim and the Baal HaTanya. But in a sense, you know, the Tanya emphasizes Kavana and Panimiyot, and the Nefesh HaChaim emphasizes Halacha. And the truth is in the middle. Because obviously one has to be careful not to be oversimplistic. The Baal HaTanya does talk about the importance of Halacha, and Rav Chaim does talk about the importance of emotion and Kavana. So each one acknowledges the importance of the other, but it's a question of emphasis. Rav Chaim felt Chassidus was putting too much emphasis on emotion, and the Baal HaTanya and other Hasidic writers felt that the Misnagdim were putting too much emphasis on detail, and they were not focusing on emotion. So be it as it may, the fourth gate of the Nefesh HaChaim, which is the most famous gate, the one that is most studied in yeshivas, is about Torah learning. In fact, you might even say the mission statement of the yeshiva world is the fourth gate of Nefesh HaChaim, where he talks about Torah learning as bringing you close to God, and he makes the point, even if it is not Nogei Olamaisa, you're learning theoretical things, you're learning things that do not talk about anything you'll ever face in your life, etc. Again, this is for men he's talking about. Okay. In fact, in the yeshiva world, often the only part of Nefesh HaChaim they learn is the fourth gate, which is too bad, because there's a lot of important things about davening and the other gates as well. But what's interesting is there, for everybody thinks, oh, Nefesh HaChaim, the central teaching of Nefesh HaChaim is, there is nothing but nothing but nothing that is so important as Torah learning. It is the most important thing, and everything should be set aside. Now, interestingly enough, if you look in the Hakdama to Nefesh HaChaim, which was written by Rav Chaim of Volozhin's only son, Rav Yitzchak, called Rav Itzel of Volozhin, he writes that the lesson that his father always had, one lesson that he would tell him every day. So you figure, oh, what lesson did he make? Gotta learn. He says, no. The lesson that his father said was, you were created to help other people. This is the tachlis of your life. And never forget that Hashem put you here for the good that you can do for others. You know, it's interesting that the Nefesh HaChaim is often not represented with that particular message. But that's the idea that Shlomo HaMelech says, that if you withhold your strength from helping others, God will take away your strength, because your strength was there so you could help others. They say that there's a great Gadol, Rav Chaim Moshe Brzezinski. He was Nifter in 1940. He was considered to be the Gadol Ador at the time of the Chafetz Chaim, but Chaim was older. Rav Chaim Ozer Grodzensky of Vilna. Great, great Gadol, tremendous Eloy. And my own Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Berdeman, when he was just a teenager, had the zechus to go visit Rav Chaim Ozer in Vilna. And he describes the scene. You know the way these grandmasters in chess, they can play 20 games at one time. So Rav Chaim Ozer was sat at the head of a long table, and there were people on both sides of the table, and some people were asking him shailas, and some people needed staka, and some people had a political issue, and some people had a congregational issue. And he would be learning himself and writing the tshuva, and people would say things, and he would be answering like 100 things at the same time. Then they say his Rebbetzin was in the kitchen, and she was talking to somebody, and he would have a comment on what she was saying, too. And people would sometimes stop in the middle because they figured he couldn't possibly be absorbing all of this. He was like writing, he was doing something else. And he said, go on, I hear you, and the like. And they say that whenever he did not have this constant tumult, he physically felt bad. He said he felt energized when people needed him, and he had to help them. And the Gemara says like this. The Gemara says, in Mechuzah was a Babylonian city, and a lot of Jews were porters. They would carry bags or luggage or things. And it says, when the porters of Mechuzah didn't have work, they got sick. When they had what to do, They were healthy and vibrant. When they didn't have what to do, they got sick. Reb Chaim Meiser said on himself, he is like the porters of Mechuzah, that when he has what to do, he's energized, right? And that's exactly the point. When you give your koach to others, Hashem gives you more koach. Okay, so what's the connection to Noach? So let's go back. The Perek Chav, of course, is connected to Noach. That's what Rabbeinu Bechaya said. Mishalech betumo, tzadik, ashrei bana macharav. So let's go back. Let me share with you a very, very interesting machshava of the Meshech Chochma. The Torah says, Eilan toldos Noach, Noach ish tzadik, tamim haya b'dorosav. So in the first pasuk of yesterday's parsha, Noach is described as both a tzaddik and a tamim, and it uses a plural for the word generations, bedorosav, his generations. Now, when Hashem tells Noach to go onto the ark, go on into the teva, he says, go into the teva, ki oscha ra'isi tzadik lifanai bidor hazeh. I have seen you as a tzadik in this generation. So you'll notice two differences between the way Hashem spoke to Noach and the way Hashem describes Noach in general. When Hashem describes Noach in general, he is described as tzadik tamim, in the generations. When he speaks to Noach, he only says this generation, and he does not say tamim, he says tzadik. Now, Rashi himself answers the second question by invoking a Maimer Chazal that says, Miktsas Shevacho Lefana. When you praise a person to their face, you only say part of their praises. So when Hashem is talking about Noach in general, tzadik tamim. When he's talking to Noach, tzadik. You don't say everything. You don't want someone to get a swelled head or whatever it is. Okay. But the Meshech Chochma is a different mahalach. Everyone knows Rashi brings, actually it's one of the most famous Rashis, it's from the Gemara though, on the meaning of the verse, he was a tzaddik tamim in his generations. Some interpret that in a positive way, and some interpret that in a negative way. Some people say, positive. If Noach could be righteous in a world where everybody was evil, how much greater he would have been in a generation of other tzaddikim. The Torah emphasizes the greatness of Noach, that even in his generation he was righteous, how much more so if there be other righteous people. That's the positive. Other people always look for the negative, and they say, yeah, he was righteous for his generation, meaning compared to everybody else, he was okay. But if he would have been with other righteous people, the lashon is very strong. Lo haya nechshav lichlum. He would be a nobody. Now, the emes is the levush. The Levush is one of the great poskim, but he also wrote a commentary on Rashi. The Levush says, there's really no machlokas here. They're both saying the same thing, but they're looking at Noach from a different perspective. If you took Noach as he was, and you put him among other righteous people, he wouldn't have fared so well, because Noach was also affected by his environment. And therefore, he was the best of the generation. But if you took him as he was, I'll make up a number. Noach is a 5. If you put him with tzaddikim who were 15, lo haya nechshav lichlum. But the other Mandiyomer says, that's true. But he wouldn't have been a 5. If he managed to be a 5 with the Rishayim, then he would have been a 25 with the tzaddik. So you see how the Levush understands. The Levush is saying, it's not really a machlokas. The one that is darshaning negatively is comparing Noach as he actually was with Tzadikim, and it says if you took him as he actually was, he wouldn't have fared so good. But the fact that he was able to be what he was in that environment meant he would have gone through the roof in a better environment. Which means Noach was also affected by his environment. Now, the girsa of some is that the comparison is not comparing Noach to other tzaddikim, but it's comparing Noach to a very specific tzaddikim. There are two girsas. Some are girsas, Ilu haya bedoro shel tzaddikim, lo haya nechshav lichlum. The other girsa is, Ilu haya bedoro shel Avraham, lo haya nechshav lichlum. Which means, according to this, we're not comparing Noach to other tzaddikim, but the particular criticism is comparing him to Avraham. What's the criticism? So this is from the Zohar. Now again, I'm always a little uneasy saying this, because Noah's righteousness is unbelievable. I don't want to speak for you, but my guess is that if I would be around at the time of the flood, I probably would not have made it. So the fact that Noah was the one person that Hashem chose among the whole world, Noah and his wife and children and their wives, Noah's righteousness is unbelievable. But the Zayar HaKadosh says that Noah is criticized for one thing, and that is Noah did not have sufficient rachamim and concern for his generation. In the Haftorah that we read, the Mabul is described as the waters of Noah. That's also in the Shabbos Semiras. Kasher Nishvata Almei Noach. And the Zohar says, why is the flood called the waters of Noach? Because Noach is responsible. Hashem says, Tachazi, come and see. When I tell Avraham Avinu, I'm going to destroy Sodom and Amorah, because they are wicked and undeserving. Avraham begs, he pleads, he argues, he debates. When he didn't even debate when I told him to kill his own son. And he bargains with Hashem. Maybe there's 50, 45, 40, we're going to read, right? 30, 20, 10. And he begs and he debates and he argues. And when Hashem tells Noach, I'm going to destroy the world, Noach builds an ark to protect himself and his family. Now granted, Noach took 120 years to build the ark so that people would walk by and they would ask what's going on, and Noach would explain it to them, better do tshuva. People thought he was crazy, obviously. But nevertheless, that was kind of passive, meaning to say he waited for people to come to him. He was not mispalel, he was not makarev, etc. And therefore, according to the Zohar, those who compare Noach in a negative way are not comparing him to righteous people as a whole, but they are specifically comparing him to Avraham Avinu. And again, this is the idea that Hitrafisa b'yom tzara, when the world faces adversity, all of a sudden Noach feels he doesn't have the strength to combat it. There's a Yiddish expression, a tzaddik mitapeltz. Tzaddik mitapeltz means a tzaddik who wears a fur coat. The mashal would be, we're in a very cold, freezing room. What do you do? So there are two things you can do. Fix the heat or make a fire, or put on a coat. The nafkamina is, you put on a coat, you're warm, everybody else is cold. You build a fire, that helps everybody. Noach put on a coat. Building the Tema was the coat. And this is why the Zohar, again, this is the Zohar. Again, we have to be very careful that obviously this is Lefi the Madrega that he could have been. It's not Chas v'Shalom, Stamazai, indifferent. But the Zohar HaKadosh says This is why the Mabo is called Mei Noach. And this is the meaning, Ilu Haya B'Doho Shel Avraham Lo Haya Nechshav L'Chlu. In fact, the Chassam Sefer has a whole arichos that Avraham Avinu, whose house was open, whose tent was open to all of the idolaters, all of the pagans, loved Hashem so much that he was willing to sacrifice even some of his spirituality to bring Hashem to others. He could have, let's say, he could have gone into the desert, he could have isolated himself, but Avraham Avinu was willing to give up even his ruchnius. And Chassam Sefer says that that is the meaning of the phrase Mesiras Nefesh. When you give up your life for God, that's Mesiras Aguf, you're giving up your physical life. When you give up your ruchnius for others, that is called Mesiras Nefesh, Mamish. So, this explains another phenomenon. Again, I'll get back to the Meshach Chachma shortly, how he answers everything with this, but to digress a little further, Reb Dessler says this explains a well-known question. Noach was in the Teva for basically 365 days, a solar year. Now, L'chaira, if Hashem wants to destroy the world and build a new world with Noach, that doesn't take a year. Hashem could have wiped everybody out in a second, and Noach would be saved. That's all. It takes God a year to be able to go through this whole process. Okay, so the 120 years, that's before the Mabul, so people will do tshuva. But once Hashem has decided to destroy the world, let it be instantaneous. So Rav Dessler says, here's the thing. Hashem has chosen Noah to rebuild the world. The way Rav Putner puts it, Madura Tinyana, it is the second edition of the world. On the first edition of the world, David HaMelech describes it as Olam Chesed Yibana. The world is established on loving kindness. So when Noach is the progenitor of the new world, it must be a world based on kindness. Noach was a perfect tzaddik, but in his personality there was a certain aspect that lacked a kindness and concern. So Hashem cannot allow Noach to be the founder of a new humanity until Noach has gone through a process which develops within his personality kindness and concern and achrayut. And that was the purpose of the whole year that was spent in the ark. Years later, Eliezer, the son, the servant of Abraham, meets the aging Shem ben Noach, the last survivor of the flood. And he wants to interview Shem. He says to Shem, what was life like in those momentous days? And Shem says, oh, you don't want to know. My father was busy morning to night feeding the animals. Some animals only ate at night and some animals ate in the day. And one time my father was late with the lion and the lion pawed off his arm. Noach spent a year taking care of every type of animal. L'chaira, a tzaddik might have better use of his time. Yet Hashem wanted Noach to develop rachamim, chesed, care, concern. That took a year. And only after Noach was mushrash with the midos of chesed and hatava, he can now go out into the world. Now, going back to the Meshech Chachma, he doesn't bring all of these supporting texts, but here's what the Meshech Chachma says. The Meshech Chachma defines Tamim different than Rabbeinu Bechaya. Tzaddik he defines as Bein Adam LaMakom. Tzaddik refers to how you serve God. Tamim is Bein Adam L'Chaveira. When Hashem speaks to Noach before the flood, he only describes them as a tzaddik. Noach is not yet a tamim, because he's not mispalel for his generation. He doesn't care for his generation. Oschara isi tzaddik l'fanai. But when the Torah describes Noach in the beginning, the Torah is writing from the perspective of the totality of Noach's life. So the way you read it is this. Noach was a tzaddik both in his Bein Adam Mamakam, and he was a tamim in Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, but b'dorotav over two different generations. There's a generation before the flood, and there's a generation after the flood. Before the flood, he was tzaddik. After the flood, he became tamim. Tzaddik tamim b'dorosav. Right? So the whole idea of the Teva was not that Hashem needed a year to get rid of the old world, but Noach needed training before he was ready to establish a new world. Olam chesed yibane. And that was the purpose of the year in the Teva. So now, let's go back a little bit and ask, why did Noach not get involved in his generation? Was it callousness? Was it he just didn't care? Was it as long as he's okay, let the world literally get destroyed? It could be that there's a deeper reason. Noach was afraid, and rightfully so. Noach is living in a world of such evil that Noach is afraid. If I try to get involved in helping them, in talking to them, in connecting to them, they're going to drag me down. I don't have the power to fight. I don't know how many people, hundreds of thousands, millions of people. And therefore, Noach adopted the strategy of separation. Not because he was indifferent, but because he was fearful of what it would do to him. So Rav Huttner points out, in that sense, Noach was not wrong, meaning the possible meaning of the Zohar is this. When the Zohar condemns Noach for being less concerned with the generation, a deeper understanding of the Zohar is not Noah didn't care and Avram cared. Noah cared also. But Noah would have been negatively affected had he gotten involved, and Avram was not. In other words, that's a more subtle understanding of what the Zohar means. Now, Rav Huttner goes on to make a fascinating point. There are two architectural structures in the Torah that are positive. I'm not counting Migdal Babel, which is a negative. But the positive structures are the Teva, the Ark of Noach, and the Mishkan, the Tabernacle, the Mishkan, the traveling temple. The difference between the Teva and the Mishkan is the Teva is designed to keep the bad waters out. There's a torrential flood. The Teva keeps the negative out. And that's really a metaphor for Noach's own life, in which before the Mabul, he constructed, you might call it, an invisible Teva to keep the evil out. The Mishkan is that which radiates the divine light from within, and it radiates the light outward. Noach's avoda was to create a hermetically sealed environment so so the evil influences will not infiltrate. Avram reached a higher level in which the holiness within radiates outwards. Now, here's where Rav Kuttner makes a very, very interesting turn. He says that the same way the story of Noah precedes the story of Abraham, in the spiritual development of individuals in our own lives, we have to be Noahites, so to speak, before we are Abraham. Meaning to say, before a person can go out and encounter all of the negativity in the world and try to elevate and be positive, there needs to be a certain part of your life in which you remove yourself from that negativity to build up your strength. I mean, this is essentially the raison d'etre of a yeshiva, right? The person goes to yeshiva, a person tries to separate a little bit from the world with the ultimate goal of going out and engaging. Now again, I don't mean necessarily full-time care, not everybody will do that, but whatever it is, whatever connection one has with the outside world, whether it's Shabbos guests, whether it's teaching, whether it's befriending, that is our goal. We have to be Avrams. The Jewish people come from Avram Avinu. That's why Avram is called the first Jew. Again, it's a bit of a confusing term. Why is he called the first? Okay, but nevertheless, our avodah is to be Avram Avinu. But before you are Avram Avinu, you also have to be Noach. Because if you try to embrace everything all the time, then eventually you do become corrupted. A person has to know what to accept, what to reject. In your own home, you have to make these decisions all the time. There are people who want to create hermetically sealed arcs in which nothing from the outside comes in. And there are people who want to create a totally open environment in which everything from the outside comes in. And Rav Kuttner is suggesting that both of those approaches are mistakes. You build a teva to get inner strength, and then you try to build a mishkan that radiates the light of Hashem outwards. How do you strike the balance is a difficult question. I'm not going to give you a definitive answer. Every family is different. Every personality is different. Those of you that have children know that every child and every grandchild is different. Some children, badatka, need a greater exposure to the outside world. Their minds and personalities work that way. And some better not to be so involved in the outside world, because it will affect them in dangerous and negative ways. Okay, I'm not advocating at all a one-size-fits-all in these matters. But the wisdom is to understand that you need both the teva and the mishkan. You can't have the mishkan until you have the teva. And Noah had a legitimate concern that the environment would destroy him, and therefore Noah needed to disengage. Avram reached a higher level where he could engage and not be affected, but you needed both. That's why the Torah sequentially gives us the story of Noah before Avram, because that mirrors what I have to do as an individual and within my family. You know, every Moshe Shabbos in Maariv, so we insert a blessing of Havdalah in the Shemoneh Esrei. We say Hashem is Mavdil Ben Kodesh L'chol. And in which bracha do you put the Atachan Antanu paragraph? You put it in the bracha asking Hashem for wisdom and knowledge. Atachonein Yibandas, Umameid Arbina, Atachan Antanu V'madya Torah. So the Talmud Yerushalmi asks, why is the bracha of Havdalah in the blessing of wisdom? The Talmud Yerushalmi says, really a remarkable phrase, Yemein das havdala minayim. Without wisdom, how will you know how to separate between the good and the bad? Meaning, wisdom is the capacity to discriminate, to make differences. Meaning, a person can have the attitude, oh, everything's strength. And a person can have an attitude, everything's culture. Both people are foolish. Wisdom is the ability to understand. There's something good. There's something not so good. I have to make those distinctions. Now, that's very hard. So I can respect somebody who says, I can't make those decisions. I got to make everything trade. You know, okay, maybe so. In fact, everything trade might be safer than everything kosher. It's a different thing. But ultimately, this is not wisdom. Wisdom, Chazal tell us, is the koach to be mavdil, to make distinctions, to understand. Like Chazal say, Chochma b'goyim kamen. If somebody tells you there is wisdom even among the nations, you can accept it. Now, there is some wisdom among the nations, but you have to know what it is. There's that which is destructive and that which is constructive. And every person in their own homes, in their own lives, have to make this decision. When am I supposed to be the Mishkan, and when am I supposed to be the Tevah?
Even the Aram had to be taught by Sarah. Even Aram had to be taught by Sarah. Yeah. He had to draw the line by Ishmael.
Yeah, that's correct. Aram had problems with Ishmael because Aram was Chesed.
Yeah.
And the Chesed could go in a wrong way. It could hurt Yitzchak, hurt Klal Yisrael. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Where is
No, in the Amidah. I didn't mean, in other words, in the Ma'ariv Amidah of Moshe Shabbos. Again, a lot of women don't daven it. So when you say Atachonein, you insert Atachanantanu paragraph. Yeah, I don't mean the Havdalah later. That doesn't have that reference.
I always felt that Noah had a bad rap because I thought that, you know, in the sunset, Hashem is not going to ask you, why weren't you like Moshe Rabbeinu? Why weren't you more to the epitome that you could have been? And why is he compared to Avram when he wasn't Avram? He was Noah.
Yeah. No, 100%. And that's why I say I'm always a little uneasy. In fact, I think many years ago I had a dream. Noah came to me and said, what are you, what are they giving you that breath? You know, so it's a very, very important idea that we have to be makir the unbelievable holiness of the one person that Hashem chose. So I wouldn't look at it so much as a criticism of Noah. I would look at it as Hashem is telling us the model to which we should aspire. Meaning, it's more like saying that a Jew should try to be an Abraham in his life, because Noah was not able to do that. But again, Noah had reasons not to do that, and for Noah it was correct. That was his avodah. That's really what we're saying. That the deeper meaning of the Zohar is not that Noah is faulted for what he did. He did what he did because he had to do that, but we should try to emulate the midah of Abraham. But again, we have to recognize Noah's unbelievable greatness. Yeah.
How were you going to connect the two?
No. So the two psukim are simply this. That on one hand, in Perek Chof, which talks about the tzaddik mitalech betuno, the tzaddik mitalech and the tamim, which is Noah, has a zechus not only to be saved, but also to save his children and the world. And yet, Perek Chavdalin reminds us that when you don't give of yourself to care for others, your koach is diminished, and that's what the Zohar says was the chisaron, so to speak, of Noah. So that's kind of the positive and the positive and the negative. Yeah.
Mind you, took a little bit apart, but to say Noah was fantastic. Say, if I would have lived at the time of Noah, and it's right, all those people, even Menashe HaMelech, Chavereinu, etc. So what's this strange nusach of a minhag when you cut the pitom, and women cut caterpillar at the end of
Sukkot.
And they say, if I would have been at the time of Chava, I would not have seen and I would not have done it.
I never heard of that declaration. I've heard of the biting of the pizza. This is some people. Okay. Well,
I don't know. It's strange, no? Or is it 2 years?
Yeah, I never heard of it. But it could be you're basically saying, I think realistic, you're not making a realistic statement, but I think you're saying, this is what I would hope to be. You know, it's kind of, I hope to be. And I hope to be a person that wouldn't have done the Aveira, but you know, you know, a person can't really make that statement. First of all, once again, Adam and Chava, what are you going to say? Their Madrega was. Okay. So Bekitra, again, so what you often see, this doesn't really give you concrete answers, and I appreciate that. But you often see that a Jew lives with contradictions all the time. That Yiddishkeit is not an either-or system. But Yiddishkeit is, to use a fancy word that Rav Soloveitchik always used, dialectic tension, meaning different ideas are pulling you in different ways, and that dialectic tension means that you have to keep these two ideas in your pocket at all times. Yeah.
It reminds me of the Rambam's golden mean.
Yes.
The golden mean, that's the dialectic tension.
That's correct. You know, right. And of course, the Kutzker Rebbe said on that when you try to walk in the middle of the road, you get hit with traffic coming from both sides. You know, and that's very true. I think, but in fact, in Eretz Yisrael in particular, if you consider the different chinuch options without getting into the specifics, I think you're going to find this problem over and over and over again. Some zeramim of chinuch totally reject, and other zeramim are maybe too open in some ways, and you have to try to have that balance of mishkan and teva is something that happens over and over again. In how we raise our children. Do you think?
Just that I'm wondering if we're supposed to take from it the steps. Like step one was that he was a tzaddik in his time and he was able to contain himself and his family, so I should have chosen. And then he learned about chesed and taking care of the animals. So that became step two, like phase two. Like the world has to expand, and if we don't sort of look after each other and reach out to each other.
Yeah.
Like phase two.
Yeah, it's a very good point. If I can go backwards to Rosh Hashanah for a moment. Rav Kook used to say that the halacha of tekiyas shofar is you got to blow from the narrow end towards the wide end. If you were to blow from the wide end, it wouldn't be valid. Rav Kook says that is what a Jew has to be. You start off in life being concerned with your narrow self, and then you move outward and onward to broaden that which you care about, and that is why the shofar gives one of the reasons why the shofar brings rachamim, because we show that we're no longer just concerned for ourselves. Very good. Noach certainly, according to Chazal, you know, Chazal. I mean, the Chumash is bad enough. His nakedness is exposed, and Chum mocks it. Okay, Chazal make it much, much worse. Either he was castrated or he was fornicated. Very, very bad. Very, very bad things. Why that has befallen Noah? It's very hard to know. I don't really have a good explanation. Why did such a tzaddik deserve such a punishment or such a? Yeah, it's a good question. It is a good question.
Shem went on to be.
Yes.
Start the first yeshiva.
That's correct. Yes, so Noach was blessed through Shem, and Avram comes from Shem, etc. But the Noach himself did suffer that way. Okay, you all be well. Have a good week.